Talktainment Radio, worldwide sound. Talktainmentradio.com. We give you a reason to come. The world's greatest radio. We give you a reason to stay. Radio, the way it should be heard. You got the power.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalktainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Live call-in talk show. Dial 1-877-932-9766 and join the conversation here on TalkTainmentRadio.com.
TalkTainmentRadio.com. We go where you go. World's greatest radio. You're in touch with This Is Libby. I'm Libby, and this is radio the way it should be heard. Call you some Libby at 1-877-932-9766. Talk to you some Libby. I have somebody with me tonight. Marshall Barnes. He's a research and development engineer. And I wanted to talk with Marshall because sometimes you don't have to always talk about health care, but then everything is about health care, even how you think, how you move, how you do things, and what you believe and how you are impressed or inspired. So Marshall agreed to come with me, sit here, and we are going to talk about truth, facts, misconceptions, incorrect things going on that we project on our children. You've heard me say many times that our babies are very, very gifted. They're very talented. They come to this planet knowing some things. So we want to get some stuff straightened out. You understand what I'm saying? 1-877-932-9766. Hey, Marshall.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so Marshall wants to tell us how to recognize and or research those things that you're being told. Don't accept every something as truth. Check it out for yourself. So we'll do that now. So Marshall, tell me what your passion is right now. What is it you want everybody to know?
Well, my passion is my work, which is in the area of advanced concept science and technology. And what that means is that we're around the very cutting edge of what's possible to do and trying to push and expand that cutting edge so that we can do things that heretofore were thought impossible. Mm. And so that's what my passion is.
Okay, so you know that the word impossible for Libby is I'm possible. I'm possible. So with that, and the children come here knowing things. They know not to eat certain foods. They know not to indulge in certain things, even at the cost of being called nerds and or other names that are not complimentary to where they are. So we're going to take a look at a movie, one or two or three or four in particular, so that you can see, Marshall can explain to you, why it's important to get it right. Okay, get it right. And I am going to stand in as the person who has those questions. There are never any stupid questions. They're just, I need answers to this question. Marshall is going to help us with that. So why don't you get started, Marshall, and I'll just chime in, and we can talk about this. Where will we start?
Well, if you're talking about time travel movies, well, we could start almost anywhere because most of them are wrong. And in fact, there's a movie out now, and I got a big kick out of this, The Avengers Endgame. Now, it has to do with time travel and the idea of trying to go back in time to try to fix things. And their take on it actually was more accurate than many other time travel movies I've ever seen before. And I thought it was really cool. There's this little scene in there where Bruce Banner, who was also the Hulk, he's now blended into something that the fan base is calling Professor Hulk. And so in other words, he's big and green like the Hulk, but he looks more like him, Bruce Banner, in the face. And he's smart like Bruce Banner.
Mm-hmm.
So these certain particular Avengers are talking about why this idea of going back in time to try to undo what Thanos did, which was basically destroy half of the universe, why that would not be good. I mean, they're rattling off all these different motion pictures that I'm familiar with and that get time travel physics wrong. And he goes, I don't know why people believe that, because it's wrong. And I just started cracking up, because it was the first time I ever seen anyone like in a fictional movie talk about that how the butterfly effect is wrong, because the butterfly effect is an exaggeration of something that was discovered by some scientists. And just think about it. When the monarch butterflies return to wherever they go, I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, out there in California, we don't have tornadoes suddenly breaking out in other parts of the country. All right? That's a lot of butterflies flapping their wings a lot of times, and we don't have this so-called butterfly effect happening. It doesn't mean that you can't cause certain things to happen that didn't happen before. We do that all the time, though. I mean, every time we, for example, change our schedule suddenly, we go out in the world and we're now interacting with people we had no plans on interacting with, or had any idea that we would interact with them. And so things like the butterfly effect are kind of like exaggerations. Also time loops. Time loops don't work the way that people usually think. And in fact, most people have no idea what the basis for a time loop is. And it's called a closed timeline curve. And actually, I've written a paper recently that shows that in real life, timeline curves are impossible. As a matter of fact, time-like curves are only a mathematical anomaly that's discovered in certain solutions from Einstein's theory of general relativity, which has to do with gravity. But I've written a paper that basically shows how and why close-time-like curves won't even happen. They're like a no-go solution. So that just gives you some examples of some of the things that that people are normally familiar with in regards to time travel movies.
Well, when you're talking about these movies, we were always presented with these movies as entertainment, that they're not really fact, or that they're not something we should take seriously. I mean, there was Mighty Mouse. I mean, he was a mouse, and he flew. And I was a child when they used to show that cartoon. However, over the years, there have been many movies that suggest you might take a look at this. So I don't know if the children are taking, I call them all children, are taking these that seriously. How important is it for them to take this information that you're sharing seriously?
Well, the difference is Mighty Mouse wasn't even a real mouse. It was a cartoon. So obviously he was not real. So, but in the case of the subject of time travel, this is something that scientists have been working on, either to try to prove that it can't happen, or if it can happen, under what circumstances it might be possible. So we're talking about a completely different set of parameters here, rather than, you know, whether Mighty Mouse could be real. I mean, my favorite cartoon when I was a child was Johnny Quest. And I actually thought it might be at least based on real story, because it was like a live-action cartoon. Well, it wasn't actually live-action, but it was real people doing real things within the context of being an animation. And so I thought there was more reality to it than, say, the Jetsons, for example. So, but in terms of time travel, this is something that, you know, Stephen Hawking used to argue about and is well known within the science community. And the problem is, in the science community, most of them get it wrong. And in the fictional setting, all of it's wrong for the most part. In fact, part of the problem of why scientists get it wrong in the first place is because they're trying to replicate the ideas from the fiction, not thinking, wait a minute, this is fiction. It's just made up. These are plot devices. They have no basis in reality, so we shouldn't expect to find them in reality. The fact is, time travel is something that is possible. It's being worked on right now. I'm one of the people working on it. In fact, I'm getting more money probably than anybody else that I know of. Probably number two, maybe, in terms of funding now. But we're not basing our work on Einstein's theories of general relativity or special relativity. We have now identified that time travel is basically going to be coming from the confluence between information physics and quantum mechanics and things along that line. Relativity has absolutely nothing to do with it. So if you ever talk to a physicist And you're asking about time travel. And the first thing out of his mouth is Einstein and the twins paradox or something along that line. Then you know that he doesn't really do work in the area of time travel research. He's just spouting off what he's already known.
Now, you mentioned the Jetsons, right?
Yeah.
However, when I was a child,
I was a child.
I used to sit down on the weekends and watch these movies. Now, the Jetsons showed us instant food processing. Mm-hmm. You go push a button, and the food is there for you to eat, ready to eat. Then there was telecommunications. They had remotes for their screens, their big screens. If George Jetson wanted to talk to his boss or hide from his boss, he just would not answer that screen with his remote.
Right.
They had flight vehicles. They didn't use cars.
No.
So then they had a robot maid, mm-hmm. and now we are seeing robots to be very, very common. They're not only used as maids. You've got the sweepers, the small vacuum cleaners that go along the floor and clean the floor, just like they did at the Jetsons.
I know. What you're talking about is futurism. And when I mentioned the Jetsons, what I meant was that, okay, we don't have flying cars, and, you know, we still don't. At least not like that.
Okay.
Because those vehicles are actually working on some kind of electrogravitics or something like that, some kind of anti-gravity kind of a deal,
mm-hmm.
From what I could tell. But that was like projecting way into the future. Johnny Quest was based soundly in right in everyday kind of life, but Mighty Mouse was an animated cartoon of a mouse, and that I knew that wasn't going to happen. So there was no mistaking. I mean, the Jetsons, yeah, that could happen in a distant future, but you know, we're still not quite there yet. In fact, a lot of people were wondering from that generation, like where their flying car is now, because we were all promised one. So. And that, I take that as a kind of a caveat in terms of believing what people are saying what our future is going to be like, because the one we were supposed to have by now still hasn't shown up. So I would take anything anybody says about the future for the next 10 to years beyond that with a grain of salt.
Well, here's the thing. The government, they don't tell us everything. However, they make these cartoons and movies for a source of entertainment. I feel they're doing this so that they can numb us out and let us get used to the concept of these cars. I mean, they've got stealth machines. They've got all kinds of interesting toys that they're playing with. And we're finding out little by little, either through a movie or cartoons, that aliens exist among us. Even there's one cartoon, I really get kind of irritated with it, where they show the Grim Reaper as a best friend of a group of children on the Cartoon Network. So when I see something like Star Trek, I want to see every little thing. I'm paying attention. And then if I compare that to what we are experiencing now, cell phones. When Star Trek was popular back then, the cell phones were a source of communication. They flipped the phone out and spoke.
If I could interject there a little bit.
Sure.
That wasn't a cell phone. It was essentially like a walkie-talkie. It just looked like a phone, or what it ended up becoming a phone. But if you look at it, there were no cell towers involved in that. Not on the spacecraft, and certainly not on some alien planet that they had never visited before. That's all they did. They flipped the thing open, and they called it a communicator, and essentially worked just like a walkie-talkie. That was not a cell phone. It looked like what we ended up calling a cell phone, but it was not cell phone technology.
Okay, so they had tricorders.
Now that's different.
They had tricorders, and we use our tablets and we communicate with each other through the use of these devices. Again, they had instantaneous food prep, and it was all quite believable. They had unisex clothing, and I think we're headed that way because of the way things are in our world right now. And then they had cloaking devices. I've seen this on several movies where you can literally just make that big machine disappear. The Klingons did it, you know, Star Trek, all of them, they all did this. You don't think this is possibly being done?
Well, I do know that there are there is ways of doing optical invisibility. I'm researching that area. I actually had a permanent exhibit until they actually closed the Santa Maria down. But there was a permanent exhibit within Santa Maria about invisibility research I had been involved in, which then ended up using the Santa Maria, and it went like all over the internet. It had to do with proving that you could bend light to make something look invisible. Mm-hmm. So that's something I know a lot about. I also know that the B-2 bomber supposedly can become optically invisible. So, you know, but all I'm saying is that there are some things that happen and do come true and some other things that aren't and aren't supposed to and aren't intended that way. The problem is that we have people, like in this new movie that's coming out called See You Yesterday, mm-hmm. which is produced by Spike Lee, and it's directed by a newcomer by the name of Stefan Bristol. Mm-hmm. And in it, they're depicting these students that attend a STEM high school, and they end up figuring out how to make time traveling backpacks, and they use these. They came up with this idea because they want to try to get a free ride into some, you know, Ivy League college or something like that, and they think that's going to do it, which I think is kind of a funny idea, but I'll talk about that later. But the thing about it is that, unfortunately, I can't remember her name, the character's name is a girl. Her brother gets killed in a police mistaken identity shooting kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so now she wants to use these backpacks, which are essentially, I guess, untried, to see if they can go back in time and undo what happened with her brother getting killed. And so that's the idea, basically, with the movie. The problem immediately becomes, there is no serious consideration about what actually would happen if you were to do something like that. Also, when they go back, and I absolutely hate this idea because it's not even based on physics, it's based on philosophy, in particular the idea of determinism. They go back in time and they try to save the brother, but every time they try, something else happens that gets him killed anyway. And there was absolutely no basis in physics for that happening. And yet, people see that. They saw it, for example, in the movie The Time Machine, the most recent version of it, mm-hmm. which came out in 2002. And the inventor's wife gets killed in a robbery. And so he wants to go back in time and save her life. But every time he goes back, something else happens. She still gets killed. And that's just a bunch of malarkey, really. It just is.
Okay. All right. Let me let you know that there's somebody who's joined us on This Is Libby. Hey, how you doing?
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. You've been following our conversation so far?
Yes, I do have a question for Marsha Barnes. First of all, I want to say, and I want to defend people that write stuff like that and are very creative, because they open the door for you. They open the door for you to work. And when I hear people like DeGrassi or whatever his name and stuff always comment on movies, it worries me. Because without a Jules Verne, nobody would be dreaming about traveling in time. Without a Mary Shelley, somebody would have thought, can we exchange body parts? And now we're taking livers out of people that are dead and putting them in people that are alive and hearts also, because Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein. But I would talk about those things that they also got right, like in Star Trek. Star Trek is a lot of stuff. You see flat screens. You talk to the computer, that's Alexa. Captain Kirk is using a laptop. He's using a tablet.
Yes.
To sign off on stuff. There's a lot of things they get right because they hire engineers and everything and say, what does it look like in the future? But I would also say that you have to look at this stuff because it gets you to thinking there's something you read. But also I'm going to ask you about Operation Pegasus also too. The time travel secret government, and don't say there's no secret government stuff, because I know you studied the Philadelphia experiment. The government wouldn't tell you, it wouldn't be a secret. But possibly the government has been doing time travel with Operation Pegasus.
Do I get to respond anywhere along this diatribe by any chance?
Go ahead.
Number one, let's talk about Project Pegasus, okay? All you have to do, first of all, is have some kind of background in theoretical physics and all the things that would be applicable to something like Project Pegasus, to then know, after you listen to what Basaggio says, that it isn't true. I mean, that's basically
it's all theory till you do it. It's all theory till you do it.
No, it's not all theory till you do it. Now, I'm sorry. Let me explain something to you. It's not all theory till you do it. It's theory until you figure out whether the theory makes sense or not. You don't even have to actually do it. But if somebody tells you, for example, that something is possible based on something that you know isn't possible or isn't real, then you know there's a problem with the story. And that's what Bisaccio does. Okay, Bisaccio has not described the process of time travel accurately to date. So I don't have to sit around and try to figure out, well, is a secret government still behind this? And then because the guy doesn't even have a story. The story he took, and I want to point this out just for those people who don't know any better. There was a guy by the name of Al Bielek who I actually knew personally. All right? Nothing Bielek said about the Philadelphia experiment turned out to be true. 100% of it was false. Now, but what he did was that was being very successful in getting people to believe this stuff anyway. So what happens is, then comes along Phil Schneider. Phil Schneider hung out with Al Bielek. He thought that kind of stuff was really cool. So what's Phil Schneider do? Phil Schneider makes up a story about his own family. His father is actually a Nazi submarine captain and all this other kind of malarkey. And then comes along the guy by the name of Wade. I can't remember if was his first name or his last name. He made up a story about how he was a kid and his father worked on time travel secret research at Brookhaven National Laboratory, which was, by the way, linked to an offshoot of the Philadelphia experiment called the Montauk Project. All right, well, he was around for a while, then he disappeared. Then comes along Andrew Bisaccio, who, by the way, his story just sounds like a different version of the Wade story. So there's nothing original here. There's nothing that makes sense here. There's nothing that impresses me as somebody who actually works in the nuts and bolts area of advanced concept science and technology. So I'm not saying things are impossible just because they sound far out. I mean, that's the area I work in. But the thing about it is I know when someone's telling me something that doesn't add up because I know what the numbers are. So it's a big difference.
Okay, so here we go. I'm going to take the position of the one who may not know the names that you spoke about or the work they've done. But in order to entertain our children on Star Trek, they have a doctor who scans the person's injuries and heals them with a scanning device. No matter what the injury is, this device heals them. They always show it that way. So for a child or a young person who's looking at Star Trek, they don't see this as impossible, especially when they go to the doctor or the hospitals, and some staff member uses a scanner to get their diagnosis and get their healing done.
Now, I'm not being critical the same way of Star Trek as I am these other people that he was mentioning. But all I'm saying is that, for example, in the movie that we were talking about, mm-hmm. See You Yesterday, there's a point in there where these kids are supposed to, who are described by Stephen or Stefan Bristol as brilliant and geniuses and all that. There's a clip that's even though the movie's not out yet, it's in a trailer that they have out. And the one kid goes, oh, we've done something that Einstein tried to do his entire life. And they're in reference to making time travel possible. The problem is, Einstein never tried to make time travel possible in his life. There's a lot of misconceptions about what Einstein did and actually didn't do. And that's one of them. And it does the movie no service. And it does what the intention of what this movie is supposed to be in part is to encourage kids to get interested in science and things like that if you're going to tell them stuff that isn't true. And the biggest problem I find with that is that the kids that are going to see this movie, a lot of them aren't going to have the background to know that that's wrong, all right? But there's going to be some kids who are going to know what's wrong, and they're going to look at that character and go, man, he's really stupid, you know? Because the question of Einstein's involvement in time travel has already been answered plenty of times on Quora.com, where I'm one of the people that writes and is one of the most read writers on Quora.com, and I've answered all kinds of questions about Einstein and what he did as far as time travel is concerned, because there's a lot of misconceptions out there. So here we have Spike Lee and Stefan Bristol just put a blatant misconception right there, right in front of kids who don't need to be taught that kind of stuff, because it's not true.
But then the programs that we've been talking about so far, they're fiction. They're all fiction.
Right.
However, they give children the inspiration to investigate. Some of our children come here knowing things, and if it doesn't make sense, they have the brilliance to say, nah, that doesn't work. However, they'll go looking for what works. What do you think? To my caller, what do you think about this? Okay, well, let's go further. When it comes to the CU yesterday, it's not out.
So it's going to be out tomorrow night on Netflix.
Okay, so for those of you who want to take a look at it, on tomorrow on Netflix, you'll be able to see these two children who are very interested and astute in the in what they're doing with these backpacks. And when the young woman's, I call her young woman, but when the young lady's brother is killed, you know, she wants to reverse that. It's so painful. So she decides to, she and the other young man with her, they decide to investigate this time travel piece to the point where they go looking for her brother in the past so that he will not be shot and they can avoid this. Our children have many things that will convince them that these things are possible. Look at the Black Panther. I mean, how much money did they make showing everybody that went into the theater that time travel works, that you can move from one area to another. You can be, you know, your ship is cloaked, and people saw them when they allowed them to see them. Then Black children used what they have, which is what I saw in this yesterday. They used what they had. They didn't have a bunch of high-tech stuff. They had simple things, but the theory was there. So why is this so important? I mean, it's entertainment. However, it's inspiration as well.
Well, the problem I see is that I actually work in that field. I have actually done STEM education programs of kids that got awarded, where I had kids figure out solutions to problems that Stephen Hawking or wrong things that Stephen Hawking had done, Kip Thorne, J.R. Gott. In other words, I'm used to working with kids in, with real life challenges and trying to solve these solutions and showing that they can actually do it. But what they were working on was real. It wasn't like just some kind of made up stuff, and it was scientifically accurate. And that was what was so impressive to everyone, was that the answers they came up with were scientifically accurate and stood up to scrutiny. And I even presented a paper on this at the 2014 100-year Starship Symposium in Houston, Texas. So, I mean, there is value to looking at all kinds of ideas, but, you know, the thing is to look at ones that actually can be translated into the real world or actually represent what's in the real world. And that's the key thing. And what I think is interesting is that these are problems that obviously were beyond the curriculum of what any of these kids were learning in high school. As a matter of fact, this project stemmed from an idea that the famous physicist J.R. Oppenheimer had. It was a comment that he made, and I'm not sure what the context was, but he said basically that there are children playing in the street who could solve some of my problems in physics because they have methods of sensory perception that I lost long ago, okay?
Yeah.
So this was a speculation as to what children could actually do if given that opportunity. And I'll be the first to tell you, most of the teachers, in fact, I think all the teachers that I originally presented this idea to, did not believe that their students, and these are students that they knew, I didn't know, but these are students that they knew, they didn't think they would be able to figure out the right answer to the question or the problem that I presented to them. And they did. Not all of them got it, but I was never predicting that they all would. I predicted about 20% of them would get it right, and they did. And when I tested the students from the Wexner Medical Science and Math Club, which was also a project they did with OSU at the time, these were elementary school kids because
yes.
I had been working with high school students, but I wanted to test this idea that Oppenheimer had. He said, I think kids, you know, children playing in the street could solve some of these problems. He didn't say children driving through the street, which is what high school students do. So that's what I did, and the kids were able to do it.
Well, I want to tell everyone that TalkTainmentRadio.com, we go where you go, just download TalkTainmentRadio.com app to your cell or tablet. Now, podcasts are available, and that's radio the way it should be heard. So I want you to stay with us as we continue to talk about our children and their brilliance and this whole thing. Call the number 1-877-932-9766 on talktainmentradio.com.
For a high school that allows you to work at a place that is right for you? Are you ready to earn a certification in healthcare, business, or manufacturing while achieving your high school diploma? Then you are ready for Life Skills High School, a free public school option for high school students 16 to 21 years old. Learn more about your free high school educational options at lifeskillshs.org or call them at 1-800-888-7992. Life Skills High School, education that fits your life.
Here's an idea. You've heard of the notion of pay it forward. It comes from the 2000 movie, Pay It Forward. Basically, the premise is helping someone with no expectations of payback, providing assistance to someone, passing information on, simply doing a good deed for a total stranger, and instead of allowing them to pay it back, ask them to pay it forward. Doing favors for other people and asking them to do the same. The principle is the same as multi-level marketing, except that instead of soap or vitamins, it's generosity between strangers that is being passed on. Pay It Forward is mentoring, it's volunteering in your community, it's shoveling a neighbor's snow, or cutting an elderly person's grass for them, or taking a senior to the store. Don't wait for someone else to do something good. Do it yourself. It starts with you. Talktainment Radio strongly embraces the notion of pay it forward. In fact, we just did.
Have you ever wished you could spend more time with your kids, or maybe quality time with your spouse, when you can actually have an uninterrupted conversation? Do you owe your dad a little catch-up time? Well, it's time to reconnect, and no activity can bond a family together quite like boating and fishing. I mean, think of all the great experiences you had as a kid when you went boating or fishing. Well, guess what? It's still great. Boating and fishing are the perfect opportunities for your family to get away, to talk, to laugh, to create new memories. So take someone you love out on the water and see where the water takes you. If you haven't been on the water in a while and you're not sure where to start, or if you just like to have some helpful tips for your next trip, please visit TakeMeFishing.org. This has been a public service of TalkTainmentRadio.com. Radio, the way it should be heard.
Sex Code War by Kahari Inaharo, the author of the Essence Magazine bestseller Race Code War, is releasing his second book, Sex Code War. Be on the lookout for Sex Code War.
I've got the water, energy bars, and camera. I think we're set for the hike.
Almost. We need to protect our skin. Don't forget your wide-brimmed hat and sunscreen.
All right. I've got the hat. I've got SPF 30. Will that work?
Yeah, anything 15 or higher is good. Just make sure it says broad spectrum.
Great. Got it. I am not getting burned again. Let's go.
Learn more at cdc.gov/cancer.
This is Al Edmondson, owner of A Cut Above the Rest Barbershop. I'm calling on all barbers and beauticians. It's time for us to unite as one. We can serve our communities better together. Join the Ohio Black Barber Beauty Network. For more information, visit www.obbn.org or call 614-427-3226 to get more information. Be the change that you want to see in your community. Join our network.
Live call-in talk show, dial 1-877-932-9766 and join the conversation here on TalkTainmentRadio.com.
TalkTainmentRadio.com. We go where you go. Download Talktainment Radio app to your cell or tablet. That's radio the way it should be heard. Now, this is Libby, and you're listening to This is Libby. With us is Marshall Barnes. He's a research and development engineer, and he's here to straighten us out on poor information. Our children are being exposed to a lot of information. So if you want to join us, just call you some Libby, 1-877-932-9766. Give us your opinion, your insights, because these are your babies that are being exposed to this. Marsha, we mentioned the Jetsons and Star Trek. However, there were other movies that were used to influence our thinking. H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, they introduced us to aliens and weapons that we typically don't use here on Earth until probably now. There's Avatar, The Matrix, and that was transferring the consciousness of a person into another body. It was pretty impressive. There was Frankenstein. They showed us how body parts can be used to create another person. They're doing that now. As a matter of fact, our problem with human trafficking has everything to do with taking our babies' organs and using them for some other interest. Then there was Dick Tracy. He had, remember that watch he used to wear, that communicator?
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. And then, of course, there's Black Panther, which I had mentioned earlier. So that being said, how do we correct the mistakes, or do we just call it fiction and figure it out on your own, or are there sources we can go to for our children?
Well, in that regard, we're talking, again, with an element of futurism. Like, this could be possible, that someone could invent something like that and make it work.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's a little bit different than when you make a statement about somebody who has passed on and, you know, and it's not true. That's never going to change. Einstein's never going to work on time travel, you know, although that was intimated in the movie See You Tomorrow, or See You Yesterday, when they made that statement in there. And I thought that was really disconcerting because, unfortunately, there's a lot of people who actually believe that Einstein did work on time travel, that he actually made a time machine, or he knew how to make a time machine, or all kinds of things along that line. And the fact is, he never did any of that. As a matter of fact, in the article I wrote initially criticizing See You Yesterday, which is on futurism.media, it's called Stopping the Clock on Spike Lee's See You Yesterday, I found the quote where Einstein responded to Kurt Gödel, his famous mathematician friend, who found solutions for closed time-like curves within Einstein's theory of general relativity, which essentially it suggests that you could, if you got inside one of these curves, it would send you back in time.
Mm-hmm.
And Einstein didn't know really what to think of that. You know, it was, you know, he didn't know they were there, and he, you know, actually they found out that eventually the closed time-like curves would only exist if the universe was rotating, and we're not in a rotating universe, so that rules that out. However, Einstein had, you know, was surprised. And so that's a major indicator that he did not work on time travel, you know, in his life, I mean, at any point, let alone his entire life, like it says in that trailer. That's actually, you can see the trailer in that article I wrote at futurism.media. And you can see exactly where this kid says, you know, that they had done something that Einstein had worked his entire life to try to do.
How important is that really?
It's really important because that is, misconceptions like that are what drives people's expectations, all right? And they have these ideas that, like, oh, well, time travel, and if you do that, there's these rules. And all the rules of time travel, as they call them, and these are primarily people that are into science fiction time travel that believe this. But all these rules, you know, are what we should expect in the real world as we start trying to work on time travel for real. And absolutely none of them are correct. Not a single one. And for those of us who actually work in the theory and are trying to make it happen for real, it gets really frustrating when we have these people in science fiction making these movies that essentially, it's like, imagine what would happen if everyone's sci-fi movie about going to outer space looked like the Voyage to the Moon movie back in the 1900s or whenever it was made.
Yeah.
You know, where they arrive on the moon and they're wearing their Sunday best and traipsing around on there. I mean, that's essentially when I hear people talk about the butterfly effect and all this other kind of stuff, that's essentially what they're doing. They're basically saying, oh yeah, and the moon's made of green cheese and I can hardly go and wear my pajamas, you know? Because that's the equivalent of it. There's nothing about the science fiction films that depict time travel, that's accurate, because none of the writers spent the time to even look at it. All right, and that's the thing that really bothers me. I mean, whoever wrote that line that kid said in that movie didn't even take the time to see what Einstein did in this reference to time travel. In fact, the line in the movie isn't even needed. I don't even know why the kid said it, but he did. And so that perpetuates this false idea that Einstein's involvement in time travel. And it's really damaging because there's nothing from Einstein's work that's really applicable to practical time travel research. Nothing. In fact, most of the people that I know of, that when I've discussed these ideas with, we've turned our backs on it. We have nothing against Einstein, but he never was trying to do time travel anyway. So why, you know, why this? In fact, these people that like Paul Sutter, Brian Cox, you know, people like that, these are all physicists, who keep insisting on referencing Einstein's work as some having something to do with whether time travel is possible or not. They're actually fulfilling this the saying that has been attributed to Einstein. I looked it up, and it cannot be said that he actually said it. But it's attributed to him, and also I'll say it within that context. The idea is that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing repeatedly and expecting a different result. So you have all these physicists out there who keep, if you ask them about time travel, they'll talk about closed time like curves, they'll talk about black holes, they'll talk about all these different things that come from relativity theory, but absolutely none of them are practical. As a matter of fact, when a scientist says, oh, if you go near a black hole, you could use a gravitational field from around that black hole that cause time dilation, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but you know what? The closest black hole is 1,600 light years away. That means it would take you 1,600 years to get there at the speed of light, which isn't happening. So, I mean, in other words, when they talk about these ideas that, oh, you could do it if you use these different solutions from relativity theory, they're not talking about anything practical. We're talking about things that aren't going to happen. And if you, I actually sat down and did the work on that problem of going to a black hole and trying to do some kind of time travel thing. Okay, it would take at least 3,200 years, okay, to even get a response from the robotic mission that you sent, because no one's going to live that long, really. And it would be different. Time dilation would cause the time to move slower for you, but it's still going to be a long time. But at the speed of light, in terms of getting the communication back about what the results of the mission were, 3,200 years, okay? So, at least. So who's going to pay for that? That's what I'm talking about. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. You know, when they spout this stuff off, it's because they know they're not working on it, so now they can just put out anything they want to.
I was just thinking about the fact that folks around here are trying to get us to the moon and then beyond the moon. Was it Mars they wanted to?
Yeah, Mars.
So somebody...
But that's possible. Mars is not 1,600 light years away, like the closest black hole. So, that's another important thing.
Yeah.
Mars, I can't remember how far away Mars is. I mean, I should know. I go to Mars Society conferences, but Mars is not my hobby horse, all right? But they can get there. Getting to Mars isn't a problem. We have stuff on Mars already, all right? So, that is not the same as saying, oh, we could go to a black hole, because a black hole is beyond our reach, period. So, and so basically, you know, there's a difference between, say, talking about going to the moon, talking about going to Mars. Those are doable things. We've done it to a certain degree already. In fact, we had a man on the moon. But black holes and things like that, And so there are no-go solutions for time travel.
Are you sure that somebody's been to the moon? I've heard conversations where it's like, that was all fake.
Well, I'm not going to debate conspiracy theories, I know I've talked to Buzz Aldrin. And I haven't talked to any of the other astronauts, but there's people who have. I mean, because I do things in the aerospace area, and I've been to those kind of conferences and given lectures. So I believe we were there. All right, I'm not going to get into a harangue about whether we were or not and all that kind of stuff. Like it's really, because the bottom line is this: I don't believe that space is the answer. Okay, Jeff Bezos is talking about, we need to get into space because we need to be able to survive in case something happens to the Earth and blah, blah, blah. And plus, we're expanding at a rate that is going to make it untenable for life to continue the way it is on Earth because of sustainability issues and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But the answer to that is not space travel. The answer to that is time travel. It's much, much, if we get it to work, it is far, 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 in a way, cheaper than space travel. You don't have to deal with life support issues. You don't have to deal with fuel and all that kind of stuff. You don't have to deal with the logistics. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is be able to find a place where you want to go, set up a base there, and then you just expand out to that base. And it's that simple. Now, yeah.
Well, I was thinking about our children. I'll give you a little bit here, and then we can go from there. There was during, let's see, Christmas time, maybe 3-4 years ago, there was a toy that the children were enticed by. You could bring that toy to the child, and they have to learn and or figure out how to levitate that toy. Now, there are some very, very powerful little children around here, and apparently, you know, some of them know how to do it because the toy was sold very, very well. I'm concerned about it because then who's interested in our children being able to do such things? If they can, in fact, do that, then something like time travel and space travel, all of that would be very interesting to them. So my question to you is, what inspired you to choose the path that you have done? We're just talking about movies here, but what inspired you to choose the work you do?
Well, because I have a really powerful imagination. I was not inspired by anything other than Johnny Quest when I was a child, mm-hmm. To be interested in certain kinds of things along that line, but and that was basic technology and all that.
Right.
I haven't really read anything that inspired me to investigate time travel. When I saw Terminator 2, that made me start to consider the question of time travel, mm-hmm. not because I was inspired by the movie, but because I wanted to resolve the issues that the movie left unresolved. And then I discovered the book Parallel Universes by Fred Allen Wolf, and then ended up meeting him, and, you know, the rest is history. But, you know, I have not been inspired by science fiction to really do any of this kind of thing. I'm more inspired by my idea of trying to survive, because I don't think that the future is as bright as a lot of people claim it's supposed to be. I don't believe them. I've sat down and I've done the math on, like, well, let's see, if you keep making AI and robots and they start getting rid of people's jobs, and then you can't answer the question of what people are going to do, then you're going to have a really big problem, which then tends to match up with other ideas that people have had about what we need to do with all these people on Earth after all. And so, you know, no one's addressed that. In fact, I would strongly suggest, for those of you listening, we're getting into a political season where people are running for president, whenever you have the opportunity, ask a politician, because we know this is something that's real, that AI and robots are going to be getting rid of all kinds of jobs. Almost no one's job's going to be safe, all right? So what exactly are they going to do? What is the plan for these people running for president to deal with this? Because I'll tell you one thing for right now, there's billionaires in Silicon Valley who are really scared to death because they don't have an answer for it either. And they're around a lot of these people that are talking about using this technology and how it's going to go. There's a lot of billionaires in Silicon Valley I think that's going to run amok, and they're scared. They're real scared. So I would just, beyond anything else that you take in today, take that in. That needs to be an issue beyond health care, beyond anything else, that you need to ask these people running for office, what is your plan to do about this issue where people are going to be in mass unemployment? And you can't say universal basic income is going to work because they tried it in Finland already and it didn't work. So what does the dishwasher do? That's what they have to answer for you. And if they can't, then you need to be afraid. You need to be very afraid.
I've heard that one before. Now, on Star Wars, when you were talking, one of those movies came up, and the whole military was all robots. So it's kind of difficult to take out a robot because they don't
Mm-mm.
have...
I know how to kill robots. What are you talking about?
according to the movie now. That's what they showed us, is that the military robots exist. And in order to fight them, you had to outthink the person who created that. So that being said,
well, I mean, in real life, there's a concern about AI and robots.
Correct.
Okay. I'm not concerned because this is something I've been considering for like since the mid 80s, you know. And so, and so basically, I laugh when people talk about, oh, AI, they could do this, they could do that. I'm like, yeah, well, I mean, yeah, maybe you can worry about that because you don't know how to kill them. I do. I have a weapons background, and I applied that thinking. That was one of the things from Johnny Quest, you know. His dad worked for the government and was in, and developed all kinds of weapons and stuff for the government. You know, he did other things too, but I remember that particle beam weapon they used to shoot down that flying disc thing with the robot that looked like a spider in it. So, I mean, like, so, you know, I am not afraid of robots or AI because I'm not afraid of stuff I can kill. And so it's like, yeah, so what?
Yeah, our children are looking at ways to kill. They have toys that you shoot those toys at the so-called robot. There's all kinds of communicator things that they're using. Even the toy guns that they're using look so real that we have to negate our children. We can't allow them to even play with those guns because the cops think they're real and they shoot them down, children or not. So the point for me is that our children are being influenced by this. So what I want to do is make sure children, all of you parents with children, understand that these influences that we're talking about today, Marshall is saying they're not accurate. So do your homework. I always suggest that you do your homework. Don't allow your children to watch these things unless you've checked it out. Marshall is saying that they're being taught erroneously. And so you don't want your children to grow up within error of any of their concepts, especially we call them space babies. They come here, like I said, knowing. So, Marshall, do you teach and inspire children? Do you do classes or anything?
Yes, I've had that whole Super Science for High School Physics program. And the Oppenheimer strain thing was part of it, where I tested these students on, for example, Stephen Hawking had this thing he had during a TV special where he called the mad scientist paradox, where a mad scientist creates a machine that generates a wormhole, and then it goes back into, connects back into time by a minute, and then he looks in the wormhole, and he sees himself back in time by a minute, and he shoots himself through the wormhole and kills himself. And so that's what creates a paradox. It's like, how can he be alive now if he's just shot himself in the past, right?
Yes.
Well, these kids figured out there was a major problem with it. I told them, I front-loaded, I said, look, there's a problem with this thing. You got to figure out what it is. And I'll just give you one clue. And do you know the difference between an indoor and an outdoor? You got to go in the indoor, and you can only come out the outdoor. And once they got the desk, okay, now you tell me what was wrong. And the first person that got it right was a little girl. I'll never forget it because it came to her right away. Mm-hmm. And I only let the students give me part of the answer. I can tell from what they're saying whether they got it right or not. Then I stomp them because I didn't want to give everybody else a chance. Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. But the bottom line was, hey, look, he only created. I'm just telling you what the answer is. In the TV show, they show him this one machine creating one wormhole, and then he looks through that and he sees himself in the past. The one machine and one wormhole. Mm-hmm. And then they even cut to that viewpoint in the past with him when he gets shot. Uh-huh. And you see there is just one machine and one wormhole. Problem is, how can he shoot himself through something, you know, that's going the wrong way? Okay? If he opened up a wormhole to the past, okay, it would have to be a separate wormhole. You'd need two. Mm-hmm. Not just one. These little kids figured this out. Now, this means they figured out something that Stephen Hawking wasn't aware of, and none of the people that worked on that show were aware of. Uh-huh. They saw the rushes. They saw the whole thing. He let it go, and it was massively wrong. It showed a gross misunderstanding of the idea of multiple connected spaces. I mean, that's the scientific thing it boils down to. Mm-hmm. But these little kids did, and they got recognized by the state of Ohio for it.
See, that's what I was speaking about, these babies. Some of them come here knowing they're gifted already. I remember, was it the tricorder on Star Trek where the doctor uses a scanner to heal an injured staff member? And I know for a fact that there were children who are watching that going, how can I do that? How can I do that? So The inspiration is one of the things I was asking you about, like
That's a technological thing. It's not like a mathematical or theoretical kind of a thing in terms of, you know, what happens if you go back in time? Are you going to have a paradox or not? Okay, that's a theory thing, and there's a solution to that if you know what the basis of it is. Most people who talk about time travel don't know that. They don't know that if you go back in time. And it works like they call it the grandfather effect. Uh-huh. The grandfather effect violates one of the main tenets of quantum mechanics that's accepted, which is the Copenhagen interpretation. Mm-hmm. Copenhagen says that you only get one outcome per measurement. So if you go back in time, then you have to be in a parallel universe. You can't be in the same one because that violates Copenhagen. And I wrote a formula, and it's held true, and it's very useful. Called McEPS. It stands for Marshall's Copenhagen Everett Barnes Paradox Solution. Huh. And it runs you through, if you have an idea that could contain a paradox, you run it through the Copenhagen part first, and if it violates Copenhagen, you got to kick it over to the Everett, which is the Everett interpretation of quantum mechanics, which allows for parallel universes. And then once you do that, you double check it with the Barnes part, which has to do with the evidence. Now, recorded evidence, physical evidence, whatever. But if the Titanic sank, and you go back in time, and if you save it, then we still know that the Titanic was in the ocean. We got the film, you know, of the footage that was shot.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah. That. We have all that stuff.
Okay. If someone wanted to reach you, is there a number or a website?
No, because I'm inundated with stuff right now, and I'm one of those people that's too busy to talk to people because I would never get anything done. And I have problems enough with getting things done. And it's insane. It's really
where
insane.
Where is this article that you wrote?
Oh, the article is on futurism.media. Well, I have several other articles I've written. Mm-hmm. Just go to futurism.media and do a search for my name and articles I've written up about Stephen Hawking and other things about time travel and, you know, the TV show Timeless. They're all there. And the thing we're talking about today was called Stopping the Clock on Spike Lee's See You Yesterday.
Was that particular piece of information about Einstein one of many, or was it something that just hit you and said,
it was the worst, but there was other things in it. And in terms of like the, even the idea, like, and every time they go back, mm-hmm. they can't stop it from happening. That isn't physics. That's determinism. And that's a philosophical idea, a construct, which I don't agree with. I think I don't like when people apply philosophy to physics because oftentimes it's wrong. And philosophers don't really care about solving things. They just want stuff to argue about. Yes, I've debated them on researchgate.net, you know, all the time, and I always win because whatever they're arguing about, I know how to look for the clues, the chink in the armor, mm-hmm. and you get it down to this one point. It's like right there, that's where you're wrong. And you know, the same thing with Zeno's paradox. Everyone thought Zeno was so smart with Achilles and the tortoise.
Yeah,
you know about that story?
Oh, go ahead.
All right. Well, basically, long story short, the tortoise says, "Hey, I can beat you in a race, Achilles. You know, if you let me have a halfway start, head start."
Yeah.
And then he's laughing about it, but then he goes, "Yeah, but I'm going to win because then you have to go the rest of that halfway more, and then again and again and again." And what it is, it's basically a mind game because at first the tortoise says, "Give me a halfway head start," but then he acts as if that isn't there, that there's not a finite distance that has to be covered. Yeah. If there's a finite distance, Achilles will win. Why? Because of something called velocity, which Zeno leaves out. It's a misdirection kind of thing. I have absolutely no respect for Zeno. He was an ancient Greek guy. I've seen all kinds of people. They say, "Oh, he was so brilliant. We had to invent calculus to figure it out." And I figured it. I proved that he was wrong by using Jesse Owens in the role of Achilles, because I could get the actual numbers for what he ran on a certain distance race at the Olympics.
Yeah.
And then I got the American box turtle, and because I could find actual numbers for how fast it would run, and I compared them both. And Jesse Owens still would have just totally beat the turtle. Turtle would have been lost the race by like days, something like that. It was just ridiculous. But if you use that, I actually use two known entities and the math and the records of what they could do in terms of speed over a certain distance. Mm-hmm. And it didn't turn out the way Zeno was talking about. Because Zeno was, it's just malarkey.
Malarkey. Well, I want you to pay attention to your babies. Your young people, and when they speak to you about a thing, I'm going to suggest that you do not call it malarkey. give them an opportunity to explore. What I'm hearing from Marshall is that everybody should take the opportunity to check facts before they decide what it is they want to do next. So what I want to do now is tell you what I want to do next, because I want you to know that TalkTainmentRadio.com, the world's greatest radio, the way it should be heard. You call me, 1-877-932-9766, and talk to you some Libby. Marshall, I want to say thank you to you as well.